goes by the pseudonym Bo Snerdly.
It's time for the Soul of Excellence.
He is a radio host at 77 WABC here in New York.
The Rush Hour is on the air.
Rush.
Now here's Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Welcome, my friends, to the Monday edition of Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour here on WABC Talk Radio 77. If you would like to be part of today's program, 800-848-9222 is the number, 800-848-9222. There is so much news. And I'm lucky I don't do drugs anymore. Because if I did, I'd be having flashbacks. I'd be having flashbacks to my youth and the protests that were going on throughout the Vietnam War era when the college campuses across America were under siege by a bunch of leftists. Back then, I agreed with the leftists, by the way, on some of the things that they were protesting. Some of them. I was never anti-Vietnam War, totally. But, you know, what is happening at Columbia, what is happening at Yale, what is happening at other storied institutions of higher learning across the country is simply amazing to watch. The anti-Semitism that is being, I will use a word that I read in one of the newspaper accounts today, spewed. Mayor Adams said that about Columbia, that the students there are spewing their anti-Semitism out, is outrageous. The fact that these miscreant protesters are still taking over the campus, and the campus has not moved with police, number one, to throw all of them in jail, period, and to expel them from the college immediately. Just expel them is shameful. There are calls, at least Stefanik and others have called for resignation of the head of Columbia. Doubtful that that's going to happen, although it could. If this continues to escalate and get out of hand, of course, the trial. Oh, and then there's Ilhan Omar's daughter whining now that she's homeless after getting suspended from the $90,000 a year dorm over at Barnard University. Whine. Go home to mommy and daddy. If you're having problems finding a place to stay, young lady. The trial, of course, is underway. The sham trial in New York over hush money. Andy McCarthy has a piece in the New York Post today. Hush money is not a crime. Bragg has no case against Trump. Well, no case or not, they're presenting something that resembles a case, aren't they? And he could be convicted of something, given the New York jury. Quickly, let me just go over a few other headlines. Won't be able to get into all of the stories. I've been waiting for this one. Finally, we have word from Papua New Guinea. Their Prime Minister, James Marape, I'm reading it like Marape, Marape probably, M-A-R-A-P-E, Marape. Has accused Joe Biden of disparaging the South Pacific island by implying that his uncle had been eaten by cannibals there. He happens to be a black guy, prime minister. You know, most of the inhabitants down under there, they're black guys. So, yeah, Joe Biden, as you remember last week, accused the black people over in Papua New Guinea of chewing up his uncle, turning him into a Biden burger. And it didn't go over well with the island. And he is complaining, too. He's saying that, you know, World War II was not the doing of my people. However, they were needlessly dragged into a conflict. They don't deserve to be labeled the way that Joe Biden's been labeling them. And he's saying that the people there are still trying to clean up after World War II, littered with remains of World War II, including human remains, plane wrecks, shipwrecks, tunnels, bombs. He said the people there live daily with the fear of being killed by bombs that could still go off that are left on the island since World War II. So if anything, he wants Joe Biden stop talking about cannibals and come over and clean up the place. Joe Biden, speaking of that, is talking about sanctioning Israel. Their security forces. Hard to believe. The United States of America is actually, under Joe Biden, very seriously considering sanctioning the Israeli Defense Forces. Don't know what that's going to look like in its final, if they dare to go ahead with it. Supreme Court today appeared to side with Oregon city leaders who want to regulate, finally put the brakes on these massive homeless encampments there. NBC reports the news really strangely. They speak about in their story, I have it here somewhere, about how the court might side with those who want to punish the homeless. It's punishment, apparently, to tell homeless people that they cannot use public property to do encampments. That was a headline on an NBC news story that I had earlier. NBC did a poll where they showed that Kennedy, supposedly Robert F. Kennedy, has potential to hurt Donald Trump more than Biden. I was on News Nation this morning and I talked about it. To me, it was a not news poll, a news not news poll. It was within the margin of error. What does that mean? That means we could be right. We could be wrong. It was not news. And the sample group was a little small. Plus, they talked to registered voters instead of likely voters. Historically speaking, you always try to get the likely voters for the most accurate. So I looked at that poll and pretty much dismissed it. But there is a lot of Robert Kennedy news. In fact, at the bottom of this half hour, after we get finished listening to Ken Commando, we're going to have Dean Karyanis with us, our resident historian, because he has an interesting article in the New York Sun today that about this whole Kennedy thing. This is not the first time, apparently, in America, and I didn't know this. Dean is a historian, great historian. This is not the first time that these family factions have evolved in presidential politics. Of course, we know about the Adams family, but nothing like this RFK business. And it's a very interesting article. We'll have Dean on for a few minutes to bring us up to speed with that. When I left you last week, I said to you that I had word that a very dear friend of mine was going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I could not. I was under very, very strict confidentiality obligations not to reveal who it was. And I did not. Well, the news is out now, so I can talk about it and I can brag on her a little bit. Here's the headline. And there are a few headlines. Let's go to Billboard.com, Billboard magazine, and here's the headline there. Robert Cool Bell, Suzanne DePass, and more react to Rock and Rock Hall of Fame induction news. It begins with this. Honestly, I broke into tears when they told me, says longtime Motown executive Suzanne DePass, about the moment she learned that she would be receiving the Amit Erdogan Award at this year's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony that takes place in October in Cleveland. That reflected many of the reactions from people. This is going to be an interesting year. Cher, who has railed against the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they didn't have her in before, she said, even if they put me in, I'd never go. Well, they nominated her. And so we'll see whether she holds to her word or whether she'll take the honor. And it is an honor. And also Cool in the Gang, Robert Bell. I did 48 shows with Van Halen, 10 shows with Kid Rock, opened for the Dave Matthews Band, Elton John, Rod Stewart, worked with Foreigner. If you call it a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, then yeah, I guess you could say I feel like a rock and roller. Robert Bell, the last remaining member of Cool and the Gang's original lineup, says his departed bandmates, including his brother Ronald Bell, would be pleased with the Rock Hall honor. Yeah. Now, as for Suzanne, Berry Gordy had a lot to say about Suzanne going into the Hall of Fame, and Suzanne had something. She's quoted, Berry Gordy gave me the chance of a lifetime. He saw something in me I didn't see in myself. And along with that opportunity came a lot of hard work and hard lessons, but it was almost like a North Star to really do things that mattered. And she, if you don't know who Suzanne DePass is, and many of you wouldn't because she is, those in the industry, in the music industry, she's part of the royalty. She is royalty in the music industry. Suzanne DePass is the force, the woman who actually discovered and brought Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 into Motown. If not for Suzanne DePass, the Jackson 5 would not. And of course, Berry Gordy. Berry Gordy built the house. But Suzanne DePass is the one person that ensured that these careers would find a home at Motown Records. And she went on, of course, not only the Jackson 5, that evolved into Michael Jackson's incredible career. You remember that show, Motown's 25? I'm jumping ahead of myself. Suzanne DePass produced that television show. She's the woman that produced Motown's first movies, Lady Sings the Blues, Mahogany. Suzanne DePass is the person that discovered and brought into Motown Lionel Richie. Feel it in your heart and feel it in your soul. And the Commodores. The music take control. We're going to party tonight. Suzanne DePass, also, ladies and gentlemen, is the producer of the most watched cowboy western miniseries in television history, Lonesome Dove. I cannot tell you how proud and pleased I am for Suzanne DePass to be acknowledged the way that she is going to be acknowledged by her peers and by others in this industry. I have had the blessing of getting to know Suzanne DePass. And this comes after decades of me saying, wow, I wish I could meet Suzanne DePass someday. And I finally met her a few years ago. And we became friends, and we are friends. I am still, when I talk to her, and I talk to her fairly frequently with her and with Madison Jones, who is their company. Together, Madison and Madison Jones and Suzanne DePass are a integral part of what happens in the entertainment world in the Hollywood scene. But she is so amazingly humble, kind, smart like you can't believe, just a delight of a person. I'm still a fanboy, even though I speak with her. I am. Because she has been a light for many of us in this industry who believe in big dreams and seeing big dreams happen. That's her life. I'm proud to call her a friend. I was thinking maybe I'll ask her to come on the show. I hate doing that. You hate asking friends for stuff. But she's being interviewed in a lot of places. I might as well ask her to come on and just spend a few moments with us on Friday. Maybe Friday or whenever she can. But I just want to say again, Suzanne DePass, I love you madly. You are incredible. You're an inspiration. Thank you for being my friend. I'm so proud of you, proud of your accomplishments. There could not be a better choice to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame than Suzanne DePass. Buzz and Early's Rush Hour, 800-848-WABC. Born today, ladies and gentlemen, another big one, Peter Frampton. Was with The Hurt first, before he went on his single career. And I mean, that record, Peter Frampton Live, whoa, you talk about an iconic album that kind of defined the era. Peter Frampton, born this day in 1950. WABC Talk Radio 77, stay with us, we'll be back. Your calls also. So if you're on hold, stay on hold.
Is on the air. Attention Ditto Heads. Attention Bo Scouts.
Rush.
On the Red Apple Podcast Network.
One, Bo. This was today is the birthday of Cynthia Johnson, born today in 1956, who had this one, Funky Town, 1980 worldwide hit with her band Lips Incorporated.
Was dancing up a storm to this one.
Oh yeah,
down to Funky Town. All right, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know. Marjorie Taylor Greene says the MAGA base is done with Republican leadership like Mike Johnson. She's doubling down on her criticism of Mike Johnson. She argues that the President Trump's MAGA base is opposed to Johnson after he betrayed Republicans. She was speaking with Steve Bannon. She said Johnson joined the Uniparty faster than anybody we've seen in history. Literally made a night and day change, blah, blah, blah. He betrayed everyone, betrayed the entire Republican Party, Republican voters, and blah, blah, blah. And she's calling on him to either resign or get fired. And I like, you know, I got to be real careful here. There's also an article in the New York Sun today by Conrad Black, who is just an incredible force. And he says, Speaker Johnson reaching across the aisle reaffirms America's heritage of bipartisanship in foreign policy. Who's right, who's wrong? Marjorie Taylor Greene is right about this, folks. This is has to be looked at as a betrayal because he said, and he did, he said it. He said that we weren't going to get this aid to Ukraine unless there was border security first. We don't have border security, period. The Democrats got what they wanted out of Mike Johnson. Am I annoyed? Of course I'm annoyed. But I never expected it to happen anyway. So that mitigates my annoyment. I didn't expect that that was going to happen because I know how to count. You do the math. Republican, the MAGA Republican base in the House of Representatives does not have the numbers to force any piece of legislation, no matter what it is. That is a political reality. It is a stinging, ugly, brutal political reality for those of us who are conservative and who want to see conservative legislative approach taken on by the House. They hold the purse strings constitutionally, but there is reality. It's called numbers. And the moderate and rhino Republicans, and there is a difference between moderates and rhinos. The moderates and rhinos far outnumber the true conservatives in the House. That is a fact of life. So I think that people should measure their expectations. Now, if you fire Johnson in an election year, what's going to happen next? Going to get another speaker eventually after a long circus. We'll end up with another speaker. And the other speaker is going to get in, and he's going to go and he's going to talk tough. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. And then when it comes voting time, he's going to confront the same ugly math that Mike Johnson has to face. The real political move here is to overwhelm and take over the party from within by electing true conservatives. As long as you have rhinos and moderates that 2-1, 3-1. Yes, Lisa, you can book Marjorie Taylor Greene, but this may not be the most pleasant interview, because there are a lot of people that are just, I mean, she's acting like she's the head of the freaking party now. And I'm sorry, Marjorie, love you, but you are not the head of the Republican Party. You're running around talking about he betrayed all American Republicans. He didn't betray all Republicans, because a lot of Republicans don't think like we do. Why don't you use some of those millions of dollars that you're raising, Marjorie, to elect true conservatives? I'm not saying she doesn't. But that's what we have to do here. You can go prattle on and on and on about how mad you are at old Mike. Old Mike's got to quit. Mike's not going to quit. And if you try to toss him out, the Democrats are going to save him anyway. Stop dealing in political fantasy land. It's time to start dealing with political reality, folks. I don't like the reality any more than you do. But I'm not going to sit here delusional. We can win. We can win. We're not going to win a damn thing in the House of Representatives. As long as there are moderates and rhinos that outnumber your conservative heroes in the House. Yes, his flip-flop does. I'm getting text messages out the wazoo. They're all compromised. His flip-flop stinks to high heaven. Yes, all of that is true. I don't like the flip-flops. Here's the thing. And by the way, to the next Republican leader, whoever you are, if you listen, don't write checks with your mouth that your butt can't cash. When you go out and you say you're going to do this and you do that, you better count the votes first before you say it. That's also political 101. Count your votes first and then make the promises on the basis of the votes that you have counted and hope that they stay where they are. But all this talk from Marjorie, oh, he better resign. We're not fine. Oh, shut up. He's not going to resign. And if you fire him, welcome to the next one. Not going to change. I don't mean shut up, Marjorie. I'm just frustrated just like you are. And no matter what I'm saying about Marjorie Taylor Greene, remember this. For all the grief this woman takes, and she takes a lot of grief, she and Louie Gohmert were the only ones, the two of them, the only ones that got in to see the January 6th prisoners, that cared enough to get into those jails and report on what was happening with those people, all of those people that were arrested on January 6th. Glenn Campbell, born today. He passed away back in 2017. This, oh my goodness, is my so my favorite Glenn Campbell song. But also, by the time I get to Phoenix, it says, Rhinestone Cowboy, I'm a Rhinestone Cowboy. Yeah, all that's his. And if it snows, that stretch and his guitar work. Glenn Campbell, American musical icon, born on this day in 1936. Time to check in with Traffic and with Kim Komando. When we get back, we're going to take a little delve into history and talk RFK. Keep it here. Your call's coming up, I promise. Stay right there.
Is still on the line.
Rush.
It's the Rush Hour with Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Oh, yeah, Mrs. Robinson. There's a reason we're playing this. I don't know what it is. Dean Gary Anderson's one of them. He said, hey, you know, you need to play Mrs. Robinson. It has a connection here. I don't know what the connection is. Dean Gary Anderson, ladies and gentlemen, is a resident historian for Boston Early's Rush Hour for our Saturday morning radio extravaganza. He was, for many years, web producer with Rush Limbaugh. He is also a distinguished author in his own right, not just history, but cooking. And on top of that, he has a great website called historyauthor.com. Dean Karyanis, welcome. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I never feel taller than when I've listened to your introduction, so thank you. Very kind of you. That was nice. And you took my bumper music suggestion. We cannot stop producing from the Rush days, so I appreciate you taking it.
Why did I play it? What's up with Mrs. Robinson?
Well, the original name was not Mrs. Robinson. It was Mrs. Roosevelt. And it was kind of a placeholder name that they had. Yeah. And if you listen to the lyrics, right, they say the candidates debate. I guess it was a little bit in their head. And they hadn't even written the words for that do part. And it was just on the drawing board. And they had gone to Simon and Garfunkel and said, hey, we want you guys to write some songs for this movie. And what do you have? And at some point they said, hey, we have this song called Mrs. Roosevelt. And then they said, it's called Mrs. Robinson. It can be any three-letter name. And they said, wait a minute, you have a song called Mrs. Robinson when we're hectoring you to write this? Let's get this out there. Push it out. Let's use that. And it became this iconic song identified with the movie. But originally it was about Eleanor Roosevelt, namely FDR's wife and also Theodore Roosevelt's niece. They were related.
And also Franklin Roosevelt's cousin. Let's not forget the incest. I mean, let's not forget the family ties here.
Fifth cousin, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, so distant cousin. But he married his cousin.
And they had the idea that he might marry Alice Roosevelt, Princess Alice, who was had really no interest in what a compelling character she is, Theodore Roosevelt's first child with his first wife before she passed away. So, yeah, there was a lot. And as Theodore Roosevelt said to Franklin Roosevelt on the day of his wedding, he said, well, that's one way to keep the name in the family.
Boom. All right, now, you have an article today, a column, in the New York Sun. As the Kennedy family swings behind Biden against RFK Jr., the Roosevelts offer something to which to aspire. What are you talking about here? What do the Roosevelts have that perhaps Democrats, well, need to look to aspire to?
Well, the family was split into these two branches. One, Oyster Bay, Long Island, which was Theodore Roosevelt's home, Sagamore Hill, that he built for that first wife. And then eventually FDR comes and he says, I want to run as a Democrat. And Theodore Roosevelt says, oh, okay, at the time. I won't campaign there, and good luck to you getting into politics. And by the way, you should have suited up in the First World War, but didn't. So that bugged them a little. But they very much, I guess you'd say, one of those relationships where FDR looked up to him and he was paving the way. And then Theodore Roosevelt passes away in 1919, and the race is on. Everyone thinks that Theodore Roosevelt Jr., who is a Republican like his father, will be the one to carry on the Rough Riders mantle. And FDR, as a Democrat, decides, no, he wants to be able to get in the big chair. And they both do this amazing following of Theodore Roosevelt's path. They do everything but go to Cuba and start charging up hills. They serve in the assembly in Albany. They serve as assistant secretaries of the Navy. then they want to run for governorship. And that's when they really come into a clash, because that's when FDR's wife, Eleanor, decides that, well, we've got to do something to get this Ted Jr. out of the way. And really, they, FDR and Eleanor, those Roosevelts, they really steal Ted's birthright. But despite that, this is something that's happening right now with the Kennedys. Who is the real heir to RFK, to JFK, to even Ted Kennedy, the way that they see the Kennedy name? And this is what happens there, where they really come in and they try to steal it. But the hopeful part is that they manage to, when World War II comes, they manage to come back together. And eventually that is healed, this schism between the Oyster Bay Republican Roosevelts and the Hyde Park Democratic Roosevelts up on the Hudson River.
So what you're advocating for is for a return to the Kennedy family, where they can heal the wounds and become one again.
Well, it's up to them what they do, but I think, you know, a few drinks, probably if they have a few drinks. But, you know, I look at it this way. I was thinking before we spoke, and I said, you know, people are going to disagree, right? Even friends, even coworkers, like you and I, if I put up any giant stuff in the office back in the day, you would come in and roll your eyes and give me a hard time about Eli Manning. And I said, this is, you have to find some common ground, right? So I don't look at you as a Cowboys fan as much as I look at you as somebody who hates the Eagles. And then if I see you as someone who hates the Eagles, then we can have a common ground. You know, I've heard many people go to AT&T Stadium down there. Not one of them's ever ducked out of the way of a D-cell battery or any of those things. So you say, okay, well, we can both agree that the Eagles should never again be anywhere near the Super Bowl. So,
well, Robert Kennedy Jr. today said, look, I love my family, and despite all of these differences, I still love my family, and I believe they love me. Hard to tell, because some of the Kennedys are really, and now the environmentalists have turned on him, the ones he used to work for. Bunch of them have gotten together and wrote a very caustic ad about Robert Kennedy Jr., but he's maintaining civility, and he's just saying, look, you know, the same thing, people have differences, but you still love them anyway. So,
especially for the Kennedys, because that was, we're not talking fifth cousins here. We're talking his two sisters and brother come out and endorse Biden and say he should drop out. So that's pretty close. And for the Kennedys, that were always family above everything, you know, we all know the scandals that they've had and the wrongdoing, where the family just closed ranks around them. And they didn't throw Ted, I'm getting stuck on Ted's here, but Teddy Kennedy, they didn't throw him under the bus when he drove off the bridge in Chappaquiddick, or she drove off without him, or he was drunk. It was clearly they closed the ranks around him, and it was Kennedys over everybody.
This goes back to what Rush used to say about modern day liberalism. Dean, liberals put liberalism first above everything else. And we are watching that play out in the Kennedy family, where, at least for those attacking him, their liberal ideological stance is even more powerful than the Kennedy blood. And that's what we're witnessing right now.
Isn't it strange, though, that they think somehow Biden is more liberal than Kennedy? Are they just that, or than RFK? Are they just that disdainful of the possibility, I guess, of Trump getting in? But it usually what would happen, especially with Biden, Biden is very easy to push to the left. He would knock down a wall to go farther. He's done everything he can to try to give people that are in the left, really the fringe originally of his party, exactly what they want. And so I would think that they would look at him. Maybe they didn't even look at him that way in the primary, as somebody who would advance their goals. They just want him out, as his brother, the former congressman, said. Even if you take one vote away from Biden, that's too many. Like, you don't own vote. That's something that always grates on me. It's something that Ralph Nader, of all people, said in the 2000 race. He said, what do you mean take votes away from Gore? He doesn't own the votes. Why do we even have elections if people are going to say that they own votes? It's up to you to go out and earn them. And I think Biden would do that. He'd gladly give away the sword to the left of his base and ace out Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I think that's weird that they would do this.
Well, he is giving away the store. I'm going to leave it with this. Look what he just did with Israel. They're actually, Biden and the Democrats are actually thinking about sanctioning, putting sanctions on Israel's military. This is Twilight Zone stuff. Hey, Dean, we got to go. I got to check in with Lou Dobbs, and I got to grab some phone calls. Always, always, my friend, a pleasure. And the column is in the New York Sun. Dean is, I don't want to downplay anyone else there, because they've got a bunch of great writers there, including Conrad Black, who I love. But I got to tell you, Dean is the star writer, folks. And Dean, you're just a remarkable historian. Thank you, my friend, for always coming through.
Thank you very much. NYSun.com, go blow them up, everybody.
Boom. All right, Diego, who?
Who indeed? This is Madonna, who started a three-week run at number one in the U.S. singles chart with This Like a Prayer. Also number one in the U.K.
And we're going to check in with Lou Dobbs, your telephone calls. If you're on hold, stay on hold. Get your thoughts together, because we're going to do rapid phones, but we want to hear from every one of you. Keep it right there on WABC Bo Snurley's Monday edition, Rush Hour.
James Golden, known popularly as Bo Snurdly.
This is the Rush Hour with Bo Snurdly.
Rush.
This guy has never been as well known as he should have, in my humble opinion. Richie Havens, folk singer. He opened the Woodstock Rock Festival. He passed away of a heart attack on this day in 2013. Richie Havens, great singer, and so ahead of his time. Freedom. Anyway, we got to get to. It's time.
James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snurdly, presents Rapid Phones.
And we are going to start with Timothy in Brooklyn, New York. Timothy, what is on your mind today?
Hey, good evening, Mr. Bo. I just want to say thank you for taking the call, and thank you for the Peter Frampton and Funky Town throwback. And thank you even more so, sir, for the Suzanne DePass, who I had never heard of, update, because I always thought that it was Gladys Knight, even though Diana Ross took the credit, who discovered the Jackson 5.
There was Suzanne. And Suzanne, she has a great story. I won't jump on her story, but I asked her about that whole experience with her bringing the Jackson 5 in, and it's an amazing story. So I'm going to see if I can get her on the show one day to talk about it. And it's not just the Jackson. She has discovered DeBarge, another one that Suzanne discovered and brought in, Lionel Richie, and it goes on and on and on. But then there are the movies. There's what she's doing now. Ugh, she is amazing. She's just an amazing human being. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Russell in Suffolk, you're up next.
Mr. Golden, I had an experience yesterday which I'd like to share with you. I selected you because I think you're the most eloquent and intelligent host on the station. Yesterday I was listening to YouTube. I was listening to the Yankee game. I had video and audio. Came time for the bottom of the seventh when they play the God Bless America, and everything was muted at the beginning of God Bless America, and it was unmuted at the end. That was very upsetting to me as an American, and I think any other American was listening also. Thank you, Mr. Golden.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Pete. I'm not the smartest. There's so many smart, great people that work at this radio station. I'm just privileged to be among my colleagues here, and they are all wonderful and great in their own right. Thank you. Pete in New Jersey, you are up next.
Hello, James. You mentioned the protesters now, and you mentioned the protesters during Vietnam. I was in the service from 1966 to 1970, and I despised the protesters back then. But 10 years ago, I watched on documentary TV that our government knew we couldn't win that war from the beginning, and that General Westmoreland kept on saying, send more troops and we'll win. So I'm not out to, I don't think I'm going to despise them so much now, but I think we have to wait. And I don't approve of Hamas, what they did.
Okay, thank you. Now, let me just add to that. We could have won the Vietnam War. The way that it was run, we couldn't, but the United States military could have prevailed. And the Tet Offensive, what actually people don't know is that the Tet Offensive cost the Viet Cong so much that they were thinking about surrendering. We could have had that war. Public relations, the media. Joey in New Jersey, you are up next.
Hey, James, Joey Falco, yeah. Good friends with Debbie Duhaime, the famous Debbie Duhaime. I know you guys work together with Rush, and she has nothing but incredibly great things to say about you.
Oh, I love Debbie.
Yeah, she loves you. Now, hey, my dad was in New Guinea, and he and his men, behind the lines there, he was in charge of 325 guys, and they worked on heavy artillery, airplanes and stuff, and they liberated, you know, not only New Guinea, but then they moved into all the other islands. They couldn't have made it without all those people. The Japanese enslaved them, beat them, whipped them, and they were friends. They were close. They fed them, and they needed these people on the islands to show them a way around. I mean, it was like,
horrendous. Didn't get eaten, and they didn't get eaten by them. No one tried to turn them into Biden burgers.
Yeah.
Interesting. We got to take one more very quickly before we go. Thanks for the call, Russ. Russ is up next. Russ in White Plains. Very quickly, my friend. Time's running out.
Hey, mm-hmm. James. James, thanks. Since these buildings weren't occupied at Columbia, I see them as more strategically sophisticated. They're on an open field. They're not really disrupting anybody's class or taking over offices. What's really disrupted the campus is canceling classes, and now there's more tents than before. They made a big mistake sending in the police, and now the Zoom classes, it recalls the pandemic. These students are angry. See, they're even calling me right now. James, the overreaction. Where's the video of anti-Jewish hate speech? There's no evidence, just like the baby burnings and the rapes of virgin girls.
There is
no
plenty
evidence.
Of evidence. No,
James.
Wait a minute. Thank you, but there is plenty of evidence. In fact, some of the chanting that's going on is wow. All right, that's it for today, my friends. May God bless and protect each and every single one of you, your families, your loved ones. Love and gratitude always for your being here with me and allowing me to be with you. God willing, we are back for the Tuesday edition of Boston Early's Rush Hour tomorrow at 4. Until then, bye.